The Good Times Everton podcast with Kevin Melling and Liam Knight, ruining the Toffees since 1995.
Here we go, episode one of the Good Times Everton podcast. I'm Kevin Melling, I'm here with my co-host Liam Knight, and over the next weeks, months, who knows, we're going to be chronicling every Everton season since 1995. In a way, I think that only you and me can trust ourselves to do, Liam.
That's very flattering of you, Kev. There's a lot of good Evertonians and good podcasts out there. But yeah, if you mean in a way only you and I can do that, we're anal and heavily detailed with non-linear stories that don't really have an impact on Everton, then yeah, that probably is correct.
Well, that's the thing. And, you know, in this season of seasons, the last one at Goodison, we're coming up to 30 years now without a trophy. There's a lot to go over and we'll be going through it all. And we'll take you through the good times, as our late chairman, Bill Kenwright, infamously proclaimed outside Goodison when he was arguing with a fan. I mean, when Bill mentioned the good times that we've had since 95, Liam, do you think he was talking about the season that we're doing today?
I suspect it was, because I feel like, you know, Bill probably was very keen on the notion of an Everton fan holding a child hitting a Frenchman or a French football player. You know, I think that was probably something that really sounded like it was up Bill's street.
I've got to be honest, it's one of the better times from this season. And we'll go through it later on as we trudge through October and November. But yeah, you may have worked out already. 2017-18 is where we're going to start in episode one. And preparing for this episode, Liam, I was starting to regret this choice, because this is a struggle.
It was a struggle of a season. It's a bit of a dichotomy in that respect, isn't it? Because I think after the last few seasons at Everton, anyone would bite your hand off for an eighth place finish and, you know, season unbeaten in the derby. But as a season, aesthetically and with the amount of drama, it wasn't a great season. And I think given it was a tough season, given the optimism of the previous season where we've ended the season strongly, we had quite a bit of money to invest in players. I think there was a real hope that this was going to be a season we kicked on, and boy, oh boy, we did not.
No, and I think in some ways it's a bit of a microcosm of the general demise that has been the malaise that has set into the club over the last 7 or 8 years, pretty much.
Absolutely.
Since the Shearer's time, probably going back a little bit further than that, actually. Optimism sort of at the end of the season before, and then you start to just feel a little bit uneasy about how things are going over the summer, and it just completely goes off the rails. And there's so many ridiculous moments, especially in the first half of the season that we're going to come on to. I just thought, you know, this is a good place to start, because we're going to be doing every season since 1995, but we're not going to be doing them chronologically. We're not going to be starting at 95-96 up till the present day. We're going to be dipping back and forth. So the first few episodes are already scheduled. As co-hosts, we've had that privilege of being able to choose them. And then from then on, the listeners will have a chance to influence which ones we'll do going forward.
Yeah, just as long as they realise that when we come to 2000-2001, I will be bleeped for the entirety of the McAllister derby, if I say anything at all.
So in come a whole host of, you know, outcasts and misfits, really, as well as a couple of big signings. So Wayne Rooney's probably the flagship one. He joins on a free transfer from Man United. There's Sandro Ramirez, who comes in, who's kind of been a summer-long pursuit of him. There was all these rumours, you know, we've got this Spanish lad at £5 million. It's a Steve Walsh special. There's high hopes for him, especially when he takes the number 9 shirt. Michael Keane, Jordan Pickford, David Klaassen, all come in for big money. Gylfie Sigurdsson is the one that cost the most. He's at around £45 million right at the end of the summer window. And Cuco Martina and Nikola Vlasic will also come in as well. Lukaku was inevitable for a while. How did you feel about Rooney when that came about?
Yeah, just first of all, to touch on Lukaku, sorry to kind of speak over there. The previous winter, or the beginning of 2017, I know it was heavily rumoured that Everton were on the cusp of agreeing a new deal with them, and then it just completely fell away. I think we'll come to our owner's comments on that later in the episode at one point. But the Rooney thing, it was a bit weird. I remember first kind of not being completely on board with it, and then it seemed to gather a bit of pace, and it became very clear he was really keen on the move. And as much as obviously he was, you know, he was starting to, well, we felt like he maybe was on the cusp of his twilight of his career. Reality opened somewhat. It was a bit more advanced than that. It seemed like there was a genuine enthusiasm from a world-class player to join Everton. And I think a lot of fans, myself included, really bought into that. And in the first half of the season, you know, his contribution was immense. I think it was 14 goals and assists in total. He was a really big player for us in the first 6 months. So I was excited at first, but as a lot of things with Everton, that dissipated in due course.
I wasn't keen. I felt a lot of cynicism at first. Like, I thought he was finished. I thought that I'd seen enough at Man United that I'd said that it was done. And it felt like a massive downgrade from Lukaku. But that was also kind of in the hope that other signings would be coming in and would complement him. He was one of the early ones. We didn't really see what was going to come next. Mm-hmm. When it was revealed and that, you know, I felt a little bit of excitement and a sense of water under the bridge, because, like, both of us and him, we were all teenagers when he left. You know, we were all just into our 30s when he came back. You know, you're a different person then, and you see things a bit differently. You know, you try to imagine fuming at an 18-year-old kid the way we all did at the time.
Yeah, it was hard, that, wasn't it? I think that's a really good point, because I don't think this move, say, in a completely hypothetical world, if Everton had been bought by the Mansour family in 2008, even though obviously he would have been he was a star player at that point, I think it would have been hard for the fans to accept him coming in. But I think there was quite a bit of detente, and, you know, going back to the previous season, he'd come back at the beginning, well, a couple of seasons prior, I should say, he'd come back for Duncan Ferguson's testimony and turned up in an Everton shirt. He'd been pictured at a few games. It felt like there was, and they I don't know if you remember, there was a special on Sky in the early winter of 2017, so around January, February. They went behind the scenes, Everton, Koeman, and a few people, I think including Steve Walsh, spoke quite glowingly about Rooney. And it just felt like there was a softening, and it kind of, although obviously it was for this season, there was a bit of a gradual it will come round. Yeah, definitely.
So Ross Barkley also looks like he's on the way out, but he turns down a move to Chelsea, a big money move late on in the window, and it's kind of clear that him and his agents are up to no good. So we'll park him for now. Is this the first example that you can remember of announcement videos being made by the club?
Yeah, possibly. I remember they would announce things. I mean, the rate with which they were having to announce things was insane. I remember being, I was in America in that summer for a couple of weeks, and I was in a place that for a couple of nights that was remote. I didn't have any Wi-Fi, and I just got a text off my dad, two texts within like an hour of each other, or a few hours of each other, just saying, Klaassen and Pickford signed with the jerseys. It was insane. They're just like these players coming in for 25, 30 million all over the shop.
Oh, I was really excited about Davy Klaassen, you know. I know. I think I'd seen him play a couple of games for Ajax against Lyon. More of them later. And I thought he looked quality. And then when we signed him, I was like, yeah, we're getting like a captain, a ball playing midfielder.
Well, they got the UEFA Cup final against United, hadn't they? They were a decent, it was a decent Ajax outfit he was playing for, and he was the main man, like you say.
Yeah, but he didn't do anything against United, and that was probably a sign of things to come in this league, because may as well get this out the way out. He was not suited to it whatsoever.
No, that happens sometimes, but, you know,
he plays more games in Europe than he does domestically.
Yeah, I think that's still true of him at Inter, to be honest with you. I think it's a similar thing at Inter Milan now with his brand new hair.
The jury's still out on Steve Walsh. So he had a bit of a mixed summer the year before. This summer, you know, you see photos of him like rocking up in Milan with a briefcase. You wonder what's inside there. Probably nothing. You know, just a complete prop. He looks like someone who's also out of his depth. You know, why we appointed Leicester's, what was he? Was he head of performance or head of recruitment or something as like the director of football?
No, he was a chief scout, but because he'd found Vardy, I'm not certain on that, but he definitely had found both Mahrez and Kante.
Well, that's the thing. He found all these players who cost nothing, and then we brought him in and gave him 45 million to get Gylfi Sigurdsson. So there was this was the start. This is where you really see the lack of a strategy from the club coming in here, and it's going to cost them for years to come, even up until the current day. Let's get on to the important things, though. Are these the worst set of kits that we've had from this Good Times era?
I would argue in many areas.
Sport Pacer, they're in as our new sponsor after 13 years with Chang. We're the first Premier League team to play in East Africa to promote this because they're Tanzanian? Or is it a Tanzanian company, a betting firm? So we play the Kenyan champions, Gor Mahia FC, in a pre-season friendly, a bit of a truncated pre-season given that we're playing in the European qualifiers. We win 2-1, goals from Wayne Rooney and Kieran Dahl. One of their fans legs it onto the pitch and just like cuddles Rooney. Weird. Speaking of the kits, we wear the grey one this day. Rooney's arse looks massive. We went to the kit launch, didn't we? Because you won tickets for this, and it was the first time anyone saw the new home kit, and it was at the Invisible Wind Factory. I remember us getting a taxi there from town, and what did the driver say that made him like not made us not give him a tip? Because it's probably the only time that I've never tipped a taxi driver. I can't remember what he said, though.
I can't remember the specificity. Obviously, it's been 7 years now.
I thought you would.
He said something, I don't know, but he said something along the lines that we said, oh, we're going to the kit launch. He was red. He said, oh, it's the only presentation you'll have. There's something about trophies. And out of our spike, because we'd have a couple of jars, I waited for the to change. Which is not really me, for those of you who know me. But...
It's not a bad joke, if he said something like that.
Yeah, I don't think it was more the joke. I think it was more the delivery.
I think the joke's on us. The joke was on the VIP section at this event, because we walked in and we knew there was a VIP section that we were not in, and it was certain kind of media types and podcasters and Twitter blues who were all there, and it was this tiny little kind of platform, wasn't it, at the side of the stage, and they were just all sitting there with bottles of Grolsch or Tuborg or whatever it was, packed in like sardines.
It was very busy. I don't remember. We got the Everton poker chips. We got a couple of pints, or pints of two each, didn't we? Do you remember that? We had the Everton poker chips.
We got a nice pint, and we had like loads of room to walk about and stand or whatever. They were all kind of just like stood there, like shoulder to shoulder. They must have been like holding out for something else, because they could have left at any time. You know, they were kept in there by a little velvet rope. Just come and join the masses, come with the plebs, have a bevy, have a dance, come and see Jackson and Garner Gay in the new kit that no one likes. So, yeah, we go into the Europa League qualifying round 3, which is not even as far as the playoffs. Like, what was going on with the Europa League at this point? We play a team, and I'm looking at the name now, and I still don't even know if I can remember it, because it's a team I've never heard of before or since. MFK, Ruzomberok. Without going into detail, we squeeze past them with 2-1 nils. It's a bit of a struggle. The team don't look very good, but you kind of, at this point, put that down to, you know, it's pre-season. It's the first couple of games. We're through.
Yeah, that's true. Especially the game at Goodison. I remember actually blagging an early draft from work because I was so excited, because it was hyped. Like, yeah, we're back. And it was a really difficult game. The game at Goodison, not difficult in terms of we weren't the better side. It was a difficult watch.
Yeah.
I mean, even Baines' goal. We love Leighton. You know, as we will explore in this podcast, even his goal was a bit messy. You know, it was just a bit of a mess. And I remember at half time, one of our friends, Simon, he'd come in a fair way, lives in Prescott, he'd come into the match, and just at half time went, I've had enough of this, and just left.
Yeah, just left. I saw the Hungs, a couple of brothers from our old Domingos team, before the Brentford game this season. And they were talking about how one of them just got off at half time against Burnley, and we just scored to go 1-0 up. But he was like, it's terrible, I'm going on. Can't be bothered. He was actually on Question Time. Not Question Time. The leaders debate thing last week. Or maybe it was Question Time. Yeah, it was Question Time, because he's a doctor and he asked a question about Brexit and got a nice round of applause, including from himself, which I liked. You know, like,
well, should we adopt that throughout the podcast? If we make a good point or joke, we'll just give ourselves a little clap.
Maybe. We'll see how that goes.
that sounds like a soft no.
Yeah, what I'll also do on this pod as we go on through the weeks, because one of the main gripes that we both have with modern football, and you know, it's not a matter of life or death, but needless away kits, teams wearing their away kits when they don't have to, it happens too much. So I'm going to kind of chronicle when that comes in. For this season, there was less than I thought it'd be. There was only three. And to qualify that, I don't count the likes of Man City, where they play in a light blue. I think it's fine to wear the away kits against them. I also think it's okay against claret and blue teams, because personally, I struggle with the closeness of the colours there. So I'm not counting if we wear it at Villa or West Ham or whatever. So yeah, these Europa League games come either side of our first Premier League game, and it's at home. It's a 1-0 win over Stoke. Wayne Rooney header on his second debut. There's a picture of the lineup that becomes a meme. We still see it. We still see it now, because it's just not like, it's like, you know, we've spent 140 million and this is what we've ended up with. You've got Calvert-Lewin on the right wing, at right wing back. The three centre halves, you know, hardly complement each other in the back three. But they get the job done. Next up, it's back into Europe.
I'd just like to go back to that though for a second.
Yeah, go ahead.
That game wasn't a classic, but there's just a couple of little things I'd like to discuss from it. And we all rightly lament the fact that Koeman played Calvert-Lewin at right wing back. And as much as we don't sign a number nine that summer, the fact that we also don't sign a right back is probably a bit. Well, I know we signed Martina, but the fact we don't sign a first choice right back, given Seamus, I know he's still here, but he's about to turn 30. He's had a terrible injury. It's bizarre.
So the Europa League playoff is next. Hajduk Split. You beat them 2-0 in the home leg. Michael Keane with his first goal, Jessica Gay, another one. We struggle a little bit in the away, although Gylfi Sigurdsson scores an absolute worldie on his full debut. The ball, it's 13 seconds into the second half, and Split have the kickoff. We lose the ball over on the wing. Sigurdsson kind of makes a tackle, and the ball's there, and he just like slides in and volleys it, and it's just in front of the halfway line. And the way the keeper is like scrambling back towards his goal and spinning around, and the ball goes over him, it's just perfect. Like, it looks great.
It's unreal, isn't it? Because he's on the stretch as well.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like he flicks it, but flicks it 45 yards.
Yeah. It looks like a glitch on FIFA or something.
It's up on the air, and then, it was quite a special goal. And we did struggle, particularly in that game. We were really under the cosh in the away leg. The home leg, the thing I remember the goals, because we were both at the park end where I was sitting. But I think the thing I remember the most is there was a little bit of needle. The Hajduk fans tried to storm us at the park end. And then I just remember this because I don't know what this guy's name is, but a lot of Evertonians will know him. There was a guy who on Wembley Way famously said, if this Iranian's got the dough, he says he has, we want Mourinho. And I've never seen him in person. And then as soon as the Hajduk fans start kicking off, he was just stood at the end of my row in the park end, stroking his chin in a pair of, what's it called, to make the scowls where get the badge in. Stone Island. They had a pair of Stone Island shorts just stroking his chin, looking at all the wreckage. It was really weird. It was like, I've never seen him in the park end before. It was like he got wind of what was going to go on.
I know a few people who went to the away leg and said it was a bit moody.
I heard a few people got chased down the streets of Split. Like, I heard it got a bit tasty. I didn't hear anything too sinister, but I heard it was a...
Well, there's not many nicer streets that you can get chased down, to be fair. It looks like quite a nice place.
Yeah, sunny as well. I've been to Croatia. It's warm over there.
Yeah. A lot of shorts on display in that away end.
Definitely, yeah.
Leighton Baines' hair looks tremendous, by the way. He goes over to celebrate with Sigurdsson, and he's got that kind of slick back, but, you know, still quite short haircut. He's also the captain as well. Just a good look for Leighton at this time, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Leighton's here, I'm sure, featuring this podcast, but I feel like he's one of those few people who seems to finesse every type of look. When he has it short, he looks smart. When he has it long, he looks smart. He's just quite a stylish guy, isn't he?
Yeah. So before that, we managed to make it 4 points from a possible six with a 1-1 draw away at Man City. Rooney scores again set up by Calvert-Lewin.
Yeah, I went to that.
Any good?
Yeah, it wasn't a bad away day. It was a Monday night. Obviously, we take the lead, and we have the lead for so long. You know, Sterling doesn't equalise until really late on in that game. And I think there's an element of frustration. One of our friends who will come up on the course of the podcast, so shout out to our dear friend Brian. The, you might remember, late in the game, Mason Holgate can play through Calvert-Lewin, or it might be Sandro, but he can play through an attacker.
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, nobody could play him in, and he was like clean through on goal. And Brian had £10 on Rooney 2-1. And he actually tweeted, Holgate, you owe me a grand or something like that, whatever it was going to be. He tweeted at Mason Holgate, you owe me £1,000. But my memories of the game are that we actually looked okay in it. And obviously, this was, these games seem long gone, but this was one time when we had a decent record against City.
Kyle Walker
hasn't beaten us in his first, doesn't beat us in his first three games.
No, it finishes 1-1, the late goal, as you said. Kyle Walker gets sent off in the first half. Morgan Schneiderlin gets sent off with 2 minutes to go. It won't be his last red card this season.
Oh, it won't, will it?
More of him later. And then we go into a really tough group, actually, in the Europa League. We're drawn with Lyon, Atalanta, and Apollon Limassol. Plans begin in our WhatsApp group for the ill-fated jolly to France in November. Back home, there's a couple of grim defeats. So 2-0 away at Chelsea and 3-0 at home to Spurs. I remember the Spurs game being where it dawned on me that it's going to be a long season. A really long season. We just look all over the place. We don't look like we can compete with any team that's, you know.
Yeah, it wasn't the fact we lost, was it? It was the nature of the goals. Like, Kane's cross is a freak that goes in. And I don't think you can necessarily blame Pickford. It was just a freak goal. I remember at one point, I think it was the second goal, Cuco Martinez just at the back stick, like three Spurs players around him. Everyone's like, what is going on? What is going on here?
He was so average that it was like, you know, and, you know, John Joe Kenny was no world beater, but like it was like, do we need to sign this fella instead of him? In the end, we needed both of them because we get a lot of injuries in those positions. But anyway, yeah, it's not looking good. It's not looking good.
Giving him a 3-year deal, that was the maddest thing for me. I know he's a free transfer, and there was a lot of chat that that they tried to sign him the previous summer when he'd been released by Southampton.
Well, we go to Atalanta. We get beat 3-0. Mo Bezic inexplicably is back in the lineup, like the starting lineup, and it's a feature of this season where players just seem to reappear from the wilderness. It's 3-0 by half time. There's not really any more to be said at this point. I'm starting to look at the relegation odds for Everton because they're still quite high. I'm really thinking that it's worth a flutter. Like that's how low key bad they look at this time, and we're only in September.
Oh, we looked at shambles against Atalanta out there. We were really poor. We just didn't lay a glove on them. And obviously, we found out in subsequent seasons, Gasperini's done an unbelievable job there and built several fantastic teams. Remember Papu Gomez, absolutely tormentous. But we were really limp. And then, am I right in thinking the next game was the defeat at United?
It was. So there's a great photo of Keane, Williams and Jagielka all on the floor, kind of like falling over each other. I'm going to send it to you now. This is as Jesse Lingard gets a shot away, and I think one of them gives away a penalty with this. They look like the human centipede. Look at the state of them.
They do. But I don't know if you remember the game. Like, United score really early on. Valencia scores an unbelievable goal. I mean, like, Pickford has no chance. And you know what? We actually played, after we went 1-0 down, we played some okay stuff. And I remember my boss at the time was in my United fan, had gone to the game and said he was really impressed with Tom Davis and said it wasn't cut and dry. And then we just collapsed in the last 25, 30 minutes and just started giving away silly goals, including to our former hero, Romelu, who we didn't replace. And obviously, I know we discussed the window, but a lot of Evertonians know that the lack of a number nine that summer was bizarre. But it is something that I think really speaks to the strategy of what's gone on with the club at this
point.
It's
stark, you know, it's really kind of apparent in this game that, you know, they've signed a striker who's at a level and at the top of his game, and we've signed one of their cast-offs that, you know, probably wouldn't have even got in our team last season. So,
but he's not a striker either, is he, Rooney? He's a number 10, I think. You know, there's, in my opinion, there's a bit of a misconception that we both...
He was a striker, he just didn't have the legs anymore for it. So we tried to find other positions for him, and the whole team was just imbalanced. And especially when we signed Klaassen and Sigurdsson, and, you know, even Flazer, two plays there.
Yeah, all number 10s, really, isn't that? You know, in that point. And I remember, and I know we're kind of going back on ourselves a little bit here, but I remember, obviously, you'll remember me being quite excited at the notion of Giroud, who Koeman says was in the building.
Didn't say which building he was talking about.
No, he didn't. It's probably Mashiri or Ken Wright's office down in London.
It's for probably me, just Stamford Bridge.
Well, he goes there in the winter, doesn't he? I think Giroud, although his mobility wasn't great, I actually think he would have been a good foil for some of the players we've got because, you know, he's still playing now. He's technically a really good player. France's all-time top goal scorer, or there, nearly there. I think he would have been a really good signing. But I remember speaking to my dad, I think it was on transfer deadline day, and he said, he just rang me and said, oh, we'll be signing a striker. I was like, I'd said to him a few days earlier, I know they spent a lot of money, but I can see them doing something like not sign strike. He went, there's no way you sign all these creative type players to break the line and you don't give them someone to feed. But as we've kind of touched on through the pod already, the strategy of Goodison is at best.
The strategy seems to be for that summer window is that we'll sign Giroud and we'll just kind of ping a load of balls up to him and then run off him. It was a bit like he did with Pelé at Southampton. And then when it doesn't happen, the plan's out the window and there's nothing else we can do. So yeah, I wrote these three centre-backs are a disaster as a back three. Anthony Martial scores an injury-time penalty, obviously. Wayne Rooney's not on the score sheet. He gets a nice big clap when he's substituted towards the end. Just feels like a bit of an exhibition. We've got Angry Birds on the shirt sleeves for the first time this season, so add to the humiliation. And to top it all off, the Blues drop into the relegation zone.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's your good performance.
Yeah. No, I didn't say it was a good performance. We were okay. Or maybe I did, but
we played United off the park that day.
I did not say that. That's obviously a lie.
But luckily,
we played okay. And maybe it's in the context of how we were playing in that spell compared to other games, but we were all right in that game.
It was a low bar, wasn't it, set already this season?
And then what I'm saying is it's a 4-0, but it's not a 4-0 where we've been battered all game. You know, there's a flurry of goals relatively late on in the game, is what I mean.
Well, luckily, Everton are only the second biggest crisis club in England. The top dogs to that crown are Simon Grayson Sunderland, and they roll into town for the Carabao Cup, their round, and they roll over at Goodison with a side that includes Jack Rodwell, Darren Gibson, and James Vaughan all in the starting 11. I remember Vaughan getting booed off when he got substituted by their fans. Umani Ash scores his first ever goal for Everton.
Good goal as well, takes it well.
It was a lovely forward pass from Tom Davis, who seemed to be one of the only players in that team that was capable of doing that.
Yeah, he was. I'd agree with that.
And he kind of had his progress hampered a little bit by the signings that we made in the summer, I think, because he came off the back of the previous season looking really good.
And I remember it's someone we're going to discuss a lot in this pod. You and I are really big fans of squad numbers, and I remember he'd obviously been put up from 41 to 26 the previous summer. I think you and I would kind of expect him not to get a number 10, but maybe have a little bit of a bump up to a higher number in the squad number shuffle in the summer. I remember being ever so slightly disappointed that he stayed at number 26, which obviously was a shirt he ended up adorning for the rest of his Everton career.
Well, the good vibes don't even make it through the short journey home because we're drawn to Chelsea away in round four. there's the Carabao. Not to spoil it for anyone, but there's the Carabao Cup run for you there. We're at home to Bournemouth on the Saturday. It already looks must win. Josh King, of course, gives them the lead. Callum Wilson must have been injured, I wrote. The story of the game is a substitute coming out of the abyss to change the tide for Ronald Koeman. And it's John Joe Kenny. He comes on in the 76th minute and the Toffees score straight away. It's actually Nias. Nias comes on a little bit earlier than that. He scores a memorable brace and gives Koeman a stay of execution, it seems.
His first game, even though he's a player that has his limitations, as we will discuss throughout this season, his first is a cracking finish. Lovely. The other one's a bit scrappy, but that one where he thrashes it in. Again, another good forward pass by Tom Davis.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, they're important goals, and it's acknowledged by fans and the media that it's awkward for Ronald Koeman. Like, this is a fella that he completely froze out really publicly the year before.
Bullied, really, didn't he? Let's be honest. I think we, at the time, in our naivety, like, oh, yeah, because Nias wasn't a great player. Like, yeah, we want to get better. But actually, on a human level, his treatment was shoddy.
Well, it's a 2-1 win. We're up to 13th. You know, it's not looking as gloomy all of a sudden. At this point, I get off to Gdansk on holiday. And I miss two real barnstormers at Goodison Park. A 2-2 draw with Limassol. And a 1-0 defeat at home to Sean Dyche's high-flying Burnley.
Yeah, I was fortunate, the word, maybe unfortunate, the word. I was unfortunate enough to be in attendance of both games. Limassol, really laboured. We should be putting sword. Rooney gets an incredibly fortunate goal where the keeper just has a nightmare. Vlasic gets a neat goal, good performance. And then they get a set piece in the 87th minute. And then one of our friends, Jonathan, was with me. I'm pretty sure you remember, he said something to me about this has got 2-2, 87th minute written all over it. He said that with about 20 minutes to go. He said
they got a player sent off as well, didn't they?
They did, but we... You know, like, although Schneiderlin gets sent off like against City when they went down to 10 men, they were the better side. We just really struggled to get this game over the line, and they get a set piece, and you get it every now and again. As soon as they get the set piece, there's kind of a fear of, oh, I've seen this one before, and it gets nodded into the park end, and then this game is the reason why, for those of you sat in the park end, to my memory, is why there's actually a net at the park end, because there's been a bit of trouble at the split game that I touched upon earlier, but a load of Evertonians throw stuff at the Limassol fans, which I've never understood, because, you know, it's not great that Everton are drawing against these, I don't want to call them minnows, but the side we would be hoping to beat. I really didn't get it, and then a load comes back over, and it's an unpleasant evening, to be honest with you, followed by a very unpleasant Sunday afternoon.
Well, the Limassol game is one that we really have to win if we're going to get out of this group. Burnley one, Jeff Hendrick scores after a 24-pass move. This is a Sean Dyche team here, just knocking it about, and we're chasing shadows. Burnley move up to sixth. Morgan Schneiderlin gets hooked off early in the second half. That's another feature that becomes quite common this season. People are starting to clock on that his head or his heart might not really be in this. There's been a couple of really bad games early on, especially in Europe, and he's just looking like he doesn't look that interested. We then get a 1-1 draw away at newly promoted Brighton. Wayne Rooney saves that with an 89th minute penalty. And then it's a really chaotic night. You alluded to it. It appears to signal the end for Ronald Koeman. It's Leon at home. Liam, what did you think of us playing in all blue at home?
If we'd have been blue socks, white shorts, I'd have accepted it. But I know we've done it a couple of times. We did it against Keith in 14-15 as well. I don't like us in all blue at home. It's a bit unsettling. I don't know, maybe because I also think, you know, you're the home side. You don't bend to the away sides, Will. That's the way I've always thought of things. It was an unusual night, wasn't it? Wasn't a classic game. I'd argue that it was one of the better games for Ashley Williams at Goodison, although I think maybe he's unfairly maligned. He was quite committed to the cause that night, not just scoring a goal, but also punching five bells out of Leon plays who had the temerity to come near him. But I think in a side that was struggling, he was trying to turn things around. And I think Koeman is rightly criticised for a lot of his time effort, and I think he comes across as aloof. I don't think that's a cultural thing, as sometimes people think, maybe with some Dutch players and managers. I think it's him as a person. But I don't know if you remember this game. He was in a tracksuit. He was unshaven. He looked quite disheveled. Because normally he was like, he'd have a slick back hair and a suit, and he'd be relatively well turned out. He looked really disheveled, and like the pressure of him was getting to it. And although for a lot of his time in Everton, I felt like he was just there for the money. And I think this was one of the few times it looked like it was affecting them. And I must say, and I don't know what your thoughts are on this, but that might be one of the reasons that Koeman does run out of road so quickly, not just how bad we are, but because he's not built up rapport with the fan base. People aren't like, give him a chance.
We'll get into this another week when the season comes up, but he never wanted to be there. And I don't think he's too sad when he eventually is sacked.
I don't think he is, but he's there for double bubble, isn't he? Which, again, we'll touch on another part. But
he's not the only one, and we'll get onto that very shortly.
Oh, he's definitely not. He's definitely not. But for me, one of the things that a lot of Evertonians touch upon, and I do think it's a cultural thing, but I think it is something that you need to discuss, is he never called Everton we. It was that distance of Everton must do this, Everton must do that. And I think, although it's not his native tongue, I think he's a smart enough fella to know that he didn't need to do that. And I think he could have managed that a bit better, to be honest with you. I think he could have built a rapport well, much better. I think.
Yeah, agree with all that. Well, Kevin Morales is back, believe it or not. It's a bit wild to think of him playing in 17-18.
Did they have the Dixies in the Philharmonic? And on the doorsteps, Ken Wright said, oh, yeah, we'll give Kev Morales a new 3-year deal. Everyone was like, really? What? Yeah.
See, I like Kev as well, but at this point, no.
I like them, but I think there's two Kev Morales, and again, I don't want to kind of jump around seasons, but I think there's Kev Morales pre-West Brom pen, and then there's Kev Morales post-West Brom pen. I think they're two very different beasts.
Right, well, this is very much post-modern Kev Morales almost. But yeah, Mason Holgate gives away the most Mason Holgate penalty of all time in the 5th minute. Fahia scores the penalty. The rain is biblical.
Yeah, it's like jumping on the journey.
Yeah. On 64 minutes, Ashley Williams, just mentioned, decides to wake the crowd up a bit, to say the least. So
I'd like to point out as well, yeah, this is not, but Ashley Williams, who was skinhead the entire time, Swansea, he's now got what can be described as a spectacular mane of hair at this point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He had a skinhead when he signed for us, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And then all of a sudden, like, wow, he's got a full head of hair. Yeah.
He's still got it now as well. It looks good on him.
Yeah, it does suit him.
So going for a ball, he pushes their keeper off the pitch. Keeper kind of nudged in first when they were both going for it. And you know what goalies are like? They just think they can get away with anything. And they usually can. There's then a mass brawl involving both teams and several Everton fans, including, as you said at the start, a fella holding his small child. And he actually throws a dig at their goalie, Anthony Lopez. I was watching this at home, actually. I didn't go to this game. And I saw him straight away. He's all over social media afterwards. I think, did he end up getting prosecuted for it?
I think possibly he did, yeah. I think he did. And to be honest with you, although we laugh about it, you know, it's not a good look, is it?
No, it's fun.
It's not, we see the funny side of, you know, he's got a kid in his hand.
Yeah.
And he's hitting, you know, he's hitting a Leon player, you know. He was jailed. He went to jail for 8 weeks. And the thing is, you know, he's the same age. He was 30. So, when he was jailed, he was 30. I was in 2018. He's younger than both of us.
Yeah, a silly decision. You got very carried away there.
There is a BBC News article, and there's a photo. You can see the Kevin Morales is actually involved. Tom Davis and Kevin Morales, the two Everton players involved with the goalkeeper. And Williams, he looks livid. It looks good, his hair, though. His hair looks nice.
He definitely took it to them that night. I remember thinking, like, you know, good on him in a way, because these were tough times, and he stood up.
Yeah, he did, and I think he's a maligned Everton player. Yeah. In history, but I don't think he was a terrible Everton player. I just think
he'd have been better 5 years earlier. I think he'd have been a really good signing for us.
The logic of signing when we did made sense, as much as, you know, we're never going to replace like for like the caliber of losing Stones, but. Williams was okay. I think that there's a lot of revisionism. I don't think he wasn't a ball playing centre half, wasn't the prettiest, but he was relatively effective at times. And I just think that passion that night, a lot of Evertonians, you know, they kind of fawn over players like Dennis Drakulars. And I think on a night like that, although it was
Judy. A poor night,
he showed a bit of care. And I think a lot of Evertonians like that.
Yeah. Well, he scores a header 5 minutes later. No one gets sent off after this melee, by the way. It's only Williams and Burton Traore that get booked.
And he was throwing punches. He was throwing punches, mate.
Oh, yeah. He pushes Lucas Toussaint out of the way after he scores. He snarls the Gladys Street end, like proper snarls them. But it feels like if we can win or even hold on for a draw, that it could be a bit of a turning point for Koeman. 2 minutes later, Gylfi Sigurdsson hits the post straight from a free kick. Leon's arses have gone.
Yeah. Yeah. Gylfi was rotten at that point. Like, got these on the ropes, yeah.
Yeah. And then Traore outsmarts Michael Keane and Jordan Pickford with a back heel, and it's 2-1 to Leon, and it's done.
Yeah. Probably like a little pin in a balloon, one of them goals, and it's just a...
I put it here, Koeman looks terrible. It looks like he's been fishing in the park for a week and hasn't had a shower. He's just gone straight to the game.
Do you know what he looks like? He looks like in Bottom when they went camping on Wimbledon Common.
He does, yeah. Him and Erwin, just out in Wimbledon Common.
Yeah, being chased by the Wombles in the middle of the night.
Yeah, just been fishing with that Erwin.
And the streak has got in. Oh, sorry, the flash has got into his tent.
But yeah, he looks awful. He's not the first or last Everton manager that this will happen to during this era. Players like Leighton Baines, are just a gay, Rooney, they're all being left out of these European games as well. It's like they're already being rested for the league games. And the next league game we've got is at home to Arsenal 3 days later. It's Arsene Wenger's last season, so the last time he manages a team at Goodison. We're 1-0 up with 40 minutes on the clock, but we have been flattered. We deservedly lose 5-2 in the end.
Pickford made a really key save at the end of the first game of the season against Stoke, but I think this was the first game where you really saw, wow, this is why Pickford's such a smart investment, because Rooney scores a fabulous goal, but we are. I think it's something ridiculous, like 17 shots in the first half, Marcel, and Pickford is just, it's not even like the one straight out, they're going in the corners, and Pickford is somehow getting there. So yeah, when they do equalise before half-time, it is not against the run of play. A bit of an unnecessary away kit thing from Arsenal here. I think they can wear red socks, and maybe it feels unnecessary because when they turn up with a yellow kit at Goodison, as they did in my first game, my dad tells me, I feel like I can accept that, but when they turn up in all black, it feels a bit jarring.
Yeah, it feels like they've done it for a while.
Yeah.
This phenomenon kind of stemmed from them. I'm willing to blame Arsenal for this.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Well, I mean, this season aside, I think this season they start wearing red shorts occasionally in games, which I really don't like. I kind of like that Arsenal were the only team that didn't wear chain shorts. They just changed their socks. And I can't
Arsenal in red shorts. Arsenal in red shorts is very unsettling.
It is. It's unnerving, isn't it?
It makes you feel really uneasy.
I just want to say to the listeners, if you don't like Kit Chat, it's meant that there'll be times where this pod is
if
not...
If you don't fierce. Like talking about footy kits, then please go and listen to another podcast. That's what I'd say.
No, please listen to this podcast, but there will be bits you want to fast forward.
Yeah, don't fast forward. Take it in. Like, you need
Join
to
us.
Hear all this. Yeah, this is your
Join
education.
Us. Both this socks, is... squad numbers, and real kit minutiae.
Like, you will eventually accept that this stuff is important. You react quite badly to my calls for calm in the WhatsApp group after this game, don't you?
I think you react badly to my reaction, but you know, it's one of the few times you and I have had a tiff. I do.
Yeah,
remember
but your bad reaction came first.
It did, but then you were trying to finesse it as ever you do, Kev. You're a very stylish man. And you could be cool, but you're trying to be cool at a time when coolness wasn't called for. I remember when the fourth went in, one of the guys I sit with got off. And he said, are you coming? And he still tells me my face was crimson. And I know it was Cooey's last stand, but I think I might have said, I'm staying to boo. I was very unhappy after that game. And one thing happens that game, it's not the last time it happens this season. Umani Ash scores a goal just because he doesn't stop running. It's no logic to it. He just runs and something happens. I know we're going to come back to that, not in short order. But yeah, a really regrettable episode in Everton history, that Arsenal game. And Koeman, although he's desperate, he doesn't help himself because there were times in the first half, although we're getting battered, Vlasic looked really good in the middle and he just shunts him out onto the wing. It was just a mess, wasn't it, Kev?
Yeah, it was. And, you know, Koeman's interviewed afterwards and says, I still believe I can change the whole situation, which he does. He changes it by getting sacked and getting, you know, £6 million into his bank or whatever it was. So, he sacked less than 24 hours later. It's done.
I was done with a very cold, like, announcement, like, picture, wasn't it? The club could confirm Ronald Koeman has left his position, yeah.
Well, Leon Osman had some interesting comments here. So, this was reported by the BBC. I'll send it to you, actually, because you can just do the honours and read it out. That's all right with you. So, I'll read the first part, and you just read the Leon Osman bit, which is a bit further down. So, yeah, Everton have sacked manager Ronald Koeman after Sunday's 5-2 home defeat by Arsenal left them in the Premier League relegation zone. A statement said the club would like to express their gratitude to Ronald for the service he has given the club over the past 16 months. Koeman became the third Premier League managerial casualty of the season after Frank de Boer left Crystal Palace and Craig Shakespeare was sacked by Leicester. More of him later. If you could just read us Leon Osman's comments on 5Live from that article.
Well, these are... It's almost like a prophecy, what Leon said in retrospect.
I know, I'm starting to wonder if he's an actual, you know, oracle.
Well, maybe we'll get Mr. Leon at some point. Leon actually said, I think we need someone who's experienced, but also understands the club and has a track record of winning things. I don't think those guys are out there. Former player then, David Underhill, gets Everton as a club and he's nurtured players. And Sean Dyche has done a terrific job at Burnley, but he would have been good 18 months ago. Everton's expectations have been raised since the new owner took over. We're now looking at the likes of Carlo Ancelotti. I can't see David Moyes coming in. I see that as a step backwards. He somehow goes on to mention three future Everton managers, not all permanent, and also a manager in David Moyes who we will touch upon, had basically agreed the deal in principle to come back at one juncture as well.
A couple of times, I think he really fancied that he was going to come back and didn't.
Well,
yeah. Well, Phil McNulty said in his analysis, and I think this is the couple of points here that kind of underpin why Koeman has to go at this point. Koeman has still overseen more than £140 million worth of spending since the summer, only for Everton to currently lie in the relegation zone. He has seemed unable to settle on his best team and best formation, leaving Everton, a club with no history of an appetite for short order signs, to make the painful call on the man who was Moshiri's first and only choice when he was loaned from Southampton in the summer of 2016. Do you remember who you wanted to replace Koeman?
No, and not for the first and last time. I think we get to a point where, you know, you just want the manager out. I actually, at the time, probably thought Dyche wasn't a terrible choice, probably because his Burnley side was going well. I think we were so disorganised. I think a bit of organisation was lacked. I wouldn't have wanted Moyes, because I still think, although I reckon there might be times later on, I wouldn't be totally against the idea of Moyes. I just think that there was still a bit of bad blood with him. I think that there wasn't anyone in particular. I know that a guy, we did eventually get Marco Silva, someone who was heavily courted by the club. And although I didn't mind his Watford side, and he'd done okay at Hull the previous season despite taking them down, I didn't see enough in what he was doing to say, well, he must be the person we bring in. So it was a weird one. I knew we needed a change and I wanted the incumbent out, but I couldn't say there was someone who went, well, we need to go and get this manager.
This drags on for a few weeks, so we'll come back to that. We're not even at the end of October. All of this
we're not even into the winter yet, guys.
No, not even Halloween. Chelsea away in the Carabao Cup. David Unsworth's first game in charge. Benny Beningame is brought in for his debut, and he'll actually play in six of eight.
What did it's you six think of Unsworth's
eight games in charge? I can't really think. It was one of them where, you know, Schneidlin was putting in some proper cowardly performances at this point, and it felt like, okay, well, at least we're going to bring in someone who's got some honesty about him and Unsworth trusts, and will, you know, put a tackle in. It was worth a go.
I liked him. I mean, obviously, he's gone on to have an okay career. Maybe not Premier League level, but I thought he was all right. There wasn't a game where I thought Beningame, he stunk that out. I thought he was okay. He wasn't a spectacular player, but he was neat and tidy.
Well, he'd won the Premier League 2 with Unsworth's under-23 season, under-23 team the season before.
Loose application of under-23. There's some hairy ass fellas in that team.
Yeah. Modelled on himself, perhaps. So James McCarthy's also back from injury for this one, and Dominic Calvert-Lewin scores in a 2-1 defeat. We then lose comfortably away at Leicester 2-0, and it's two first half goals, which are enough.
Spectacular on goal by poor John Joe Kenny. What's that one in there, the lady and man?
Well, the other one is from a certain Damari Gray.
Yes.
And then November does start. It comes around with your co-hosts heading off to Lyon. We go there knowing that the European campaign's virtually over, only three games in, knowing David Unsworth is leaving half the first team behind to rest up for Watford at the weekend.
But just like to say to the listeners, we booked this in August with our hope-filled hearts, not realising that we'd already built the group less now.
Well, I think everyone did, and when you think that we still have like a full away end in the game in Cyprus, that dead rubber, which will come later, everyone makes the plans that early, don't they? But even still, at this point, it's European away. That's always exciting. Tell us about it, Liam. Let's have Liam on, Leon. You organised much of this trip.
I did. Well, as often with European ways, those listeners who've been to them know that the flights direct to any place from Liverpool or Manchester near quadruple in price. So we started looking at alternate ways, and we flew from Manchester to Brussels on a Wednesday night. There's an unfortunate incident where I'm in the facilities. We're in a hostel. There's four of us in a hostel, and one of the lads is in a bed next to the facilities. So I decided to put
the facilities. Do you mean the bog?
Okay, we're trying to be a classic.
You're trying to be all Belgian.
And anyway, I use the loo, I put my Spotify on shuffle, and the song that comes on that I suspect Kevin will be able to play is the absolute classic that is Outside by George Michael, which ends up blaring and causing much confusion to my friends.
I think they wished you would go outside, but being a big fan of that song, I was happy with it. I was also furthest away from the bathroom at this point, so it was fine with me. But make no mistake, George Michael is done with the sofa.
Yeah, he is, and we end up becoming a running joke throughout our trip, even though it's cold. Some people go, I want to go into a bar, and me and Kev will go, let's sit outside.
The Good Times Everton podcast is brought to you in association with Down the Hatch. Based on Duke Street and Liverpool City Centre, Down the Hatch is the number one spot for all your vegan junk food needs. You can find them on Instagram at Down the Hatch LIV, on X, formerly known as Twitter, at DTHLIV. Their website is downthehatchliv.co.uk.
We get to Lyon, we have a day on the ale, and then we're starving. And
beautiful place, I'd like to say, Lyon.
Yeah, it was really nice. But in the culinary capital of France, we go for a pizza, don't we?
And a pizza.
We did, but I would say that compared to a lot of our fellow Blues, we were probably a bit more cultural because we went back to square later that night and all the restaurants were empty, but the McDonald's had the queue outside it.
Yeah, everyone in it looked like Brian Gill. Yeah.
Would you say we were well-oiled by the time we got to the stadium, Kev?
Yeah, and it's that gets to that awkward point where you can't have a bevy anymore and it starts to wear off, and especially with how things were going on the pitch. You know, the day has peaked. The game itself, we'll get onto that now. It looks like Unsworth has asked like an AI app or some rhesus monkeys to pick his team. He's got three defensive midfielders, two wingers, no one up front. Cuco Martina appears to get decapitated. He's got to come off. Ashley Williams gets tethered by the home fans, who incidentally we're sitting with because our tickets are in the home end. The Everton end was opposite to us up in the corner and it looked pretty miserable. So yeah, the Lyon fans tell us that Williams is a big shit. And that our team is shit. And
yeah, never forget that lad turned around saying in English, your team is shit.
And he's spot on. From our spec, we see Kevin Mirage.
He says we know. To the listeners, we did acknowledge that and said, yeah, we know.
We D'accord. Although D'accord,
would you agree?
That's a different season. He'll come in 98,
99. Oh,
Morales is fuming that he's not coming on as a sub. And I think this is when he finally checks out. Was this where you came up with the super big Kev?
Yeah, he was about to come on, and we had a conversation at half time, and we were looking to prep him. And you said, Liam, you look a bit worse wear here because we've been drinking all day. And I said, I'm not bevied. And then literally next sentence, oh, look, this super big Kev Morales. Because Stamp on Twitter was calling him Big Kev Morales, and a lot of people called him Super Kev Morales. So I confused the two. So
you just decided to make like a mega nickname for him.
Yeah. Yeah, and then he became known in our WhatsApp group for the rest of the time as SBK.
SBK?
Yeah, SBK, Super Big Kev. And there were a couple of bits from this game, which was a poor game. We were in it for the first hour, despite the ramshackle team with Singleton as a false nine, so to speak. We had some half chances. Loughman looked okay. But a couple of things that stood out to me. When Martina was injured, Mo Bessage had to go to right back, and John Joe Kenny went to left back. And the two players I wanted to talk about briefly, I remember seeing David Unsworth shout instructions at Bessage, and he clearly just was not listening to him. Just had no interest in what he was saying. And it showed the real disconnect at the time. But John Joe, who, you know, is I think he's doing okay here at the Billion now, is a very big Evertonian and probably not the most spectacular player to play for Everton, but I don't think you can doubt he's someone who cares and very much is a big Evertonian. There's a fella behind us who's probably old enough to be his and our dad, and he starts shouting, John Joe! John Joe! At the top of his voice, and Kenny looks up and he goes, it's someone, lad! And then John Joe Kenny puts his thumb up, and the next time Lyon playing his vicinity gets the ball, John Joe Kenny absolutely cleans him out.
Well, yeah, and it's about time someone did.
Someone did something in it.
Yeah, especially in these European games.
Yeah,
Morgan Schneiderlin gets the most blatantly deliberate second yellow you'll ever see.
Well, it was his first. He just spent the second half around the pitch booting people trying to get booked, which I didn't take too well at the time.
Well, he goes in and probably runs a nice bubble bath while the rest of his teammates get olayed all over the Groupama Stadium. It finishes 3-0. It's not good. Back to Watford at home, which is again feels like a big game already at this point of the season.
Mm-hmm. Bonfire night.
Yeah, and a load of players have been rested midweek, but are back. So Jagielka's in, Leighton Baines, Tom Davis, Wayne Rooney. Watford's team includes Decore, Richarlison, and the aforementioned Cleverley.
Mm-hmm.
They're also managed by Marco Silva, and you alluded to that a few minutes ago. Fahad Nashiri has, you know, tried and failed poaching from Watford for the last few weeks. It ends up with Watford even reporting Everton to the Premier League and making like official complaints. Blues are 19th going into this one. Rooney and Sigurdsson are on the wings. I remember thinking this was Rooney's worst ever game.
I think it's fair to say it was a poor Everton game generally, even though obviously we were going to discuss that the outcome was positive.
Yeah, well, it's Richarlison and Cabaselli score, like you said. A lot of fans get off. A little bit later, the goalkeeper, Arrestus Karnezesus, and I've put Alan Partridge shrug beam in brackets.
Well, I think he ended up at Napoli at one point. He actually comes on because I think when it's 1-0, there's a clash on the line with Aurelio Gomez.
Aurelio Gomez goes off, yeah. That's why we'll get so much injury time.
I mean, we spoke before about the man in the ass just running. Yeah. The first goals get back in the game from that, but also comes from, I think it's Holobas gets a bit confused, the left back, and Karnezesus just comes rushing out of his goal, like out of his box.
Yeah,
it was insane. And then I think Cabaselli tries to clean out in the ass and it goes in off his backside. It was quite a comical goal.
Yeah, I've written here, it's the archetypal in the ass goal. The ass then nearly sets up John Joe Kenny for an equaliser, but his shot gets saved.
He screams, goes, come on. He tries to get the grab the streak going.
Well, at this point, the younger players are giving the team a little bit of identity. You know, they're not...
Absolutely.
None of them are great players, but they're playing. They're in the team, and the likes of Klassen and Sandro are nowhere near it. So from the corner, Leighton Baines puts in a high cross to the far post. Calvert-Lewin gets up and plants home ahead of a 2-all, and it's remarkably similar. It's remarkably similar to his goal that he just scored in the derby a couple of months ago.
Yeah, it is. And
he's got one of those eye masks on.
Yeah.
We go into injury time. Some dope falls over and wipes out Adam Lennon. He tries to get a free kick for Watford, but it's a penalty all day.
And it is. Baines, it's an accident. It's Holobas. It's an accident.
So Leighton Baines, he's got a new buzz cut. Looks like Jim Carrey and Me, Myself and Irene. Not his best look.
No.
He steps up and he
squeezes. You keep Reddy Zellweger entertained.
What did you say?
You'll keep Reddy Zellweger entertained.
You know, I haven't seen that film for years. It was funny, wasn't it? Probably very.
I think elements won't have aged well.
Certain elements.
Yeah, major elements of that story won't have aged well.
We'll leave that there as well. Baines, he squeezes it in. It's 3-2, but it's Everton in the autumn of 2017, Liam. So what happens next?
Well, I love that you said it's Everton. I think someone will come through to a lot as it's terrible, but it's Everton. Our future hero, Richarlison, is felled in the box. Watford crashed the ball against the bar, but it's too late. The referee gives a penalty in front of me in the park end. Not too pleased about it. Clear pen. But fortunately for Everton, on this penalty is the aforementioned Tom Cleverley, who somehow manages to put his pen outside that entrance between the Bullens Road and the park end.
He properly drags it wide, doesn't he? Like, comfortably drags it wide.
He's the cap at that point. And I think, in terms of result, that's a really big result at that time. It's not a classic, and Unsworth's spell will have further poor performances and poor results. But just to kind of get a little bit of positivity and something nice happen, I think it was important for the club at that point. So I think it's a really big result that gives us a bit of stability, etc.
Yeah, well, we've won. Unzi wrote off Europe, but we've won and we're up to 15th. A 2-2 draw away at Crystal Palace, who are bottom, is next. That's most remembered for Nias getting a retrospective ban for diving.
Only him and Manuel Lanzini ever got that.
Yeah. And mayhem's never too far away with the Blues. So after a couple of decent results, it's a miserable 5-1 defeat at home to Atalanta. It officially confirms our exit from the Europa League.
It was done before the game. It was, I know Sandro didn't get a goal, but we
only
just
goal.
They were just street settlers in both those games. And no one likes getting pumped at Goodison, but I don't think we could have any complaints on the night. No. It was a fair result.
And then it's Southampton away. Gylfie Sigurdsson gets his first league goal for the Blues. He gets the ball from Calvert-Lewin. He shapes to hit a left-foot shot. Dummies it. Puts one Virgil van Dijk on his arse. Hits it with his right foot for 25 yards. It hits the bar, then the post, then the goal line, then the bar again. Bounces over the line and just kind of bobbles into the side of the net. It's an unbelievable goal. I don't think I've seen anything quite like it.
Yeah. Just insanity.
We also get beat 4-1.
Yeah, it's a weird goal. It's a great goal, but the game itself is, I think it's in the deer. I think it was a shoddy Everton performance. A lot of Evertonians remember the offside line at one point where our defence was so skewiff. And I just think, Yeah, the goal is a decent goal, but I think this was the moment I really started to panic. I think this is the moment where you start thinking, right, we do need to do something drastic and drastic quickly, because the thing, as we found in other seasons in our history with relegation battles, is momentum is a key element of it. And if you get it down with momentum, as we were having at this point, it can be incredibly hard to arrest.
Well, down with momentum is absolutely right. We're still in November yet. This is our first episode and I feel exhausted already.
We've only got 30 years of this left.
But yeah, you're right. I don't know how much we want to talk about this, but Sam Allardyce comes in. I remember feeling mortified. I saw the picture of him with Sammy Lee and Big Dunk. I felt embarrassed for Duncan, the way he's standing there next to them, smiling, you know, all in the matching training gear. Dunk's managed to convince another manager to come in and keep him on the coaching staff as a way of, you know, appeasing the fans. It's very, I'm looking at it now, it's just, still makes me uneasy to this day.
I think one of the reasons it's not nice, and maybe a lot of people don't remember this, but Lee was also with Koeman at Southampton. I think Koeman had expressed an interest in bringing Lee with him to Goodison from Southampton. And it was something that I think there was kind of very short shrift given to. And I understood that that Allardyce wanted his own people. But, you know, I mean, the way Sammy Lee has his... Oh, no, he doesn't. I thought he had his tracksuit tucked into his bottoms. I think that the very fact that Allardyce was allowed to bring him in tells you that he had this over a barrel at that point.
It does look like he's got his tracking tucked in there. But
yeah, it looks tucked in. I think it's not. I think the thing is with that is, I think it just shows that, you know, I think it shows a disconnect with the club allowing that to happen. And it's not the first ex-Liverpool member staff who will join us, unfortunately. And, you know, I think sometimes as a club, fan base, we can be guilty of defining ourselves by them. But I never saw the logic in Lee. I know he was kind of fated as a coach in some areas, but, you know, he was a failure as a manager at Bolton. I just never really understood the logic in bringing him in. From his own perspective as well, because I think, if I remember rightly, he was actually going to be doing a pre-derby evening with some Liverpool fans not long after this, and obviously it got cancelled. I think, although he's probably considered a Liverpool legend to an extent still, I think he burnt a few bridges at that end himself. So, that was always a weird one to me, and I never really saw the logic in it, but hey-ho.
The two Sams are in place, and Allardyce is in the stands for Unsworth's last game's caretaker. Before we release the Rhino back into the wild, it's David Moyes' West Ham at Goodison Park. They're actually a place behind us at this time.
Yeah. Both have had really poor starts of the season.
Yeah, and I didn't go to this game. I remember I chose to do some overtime in Wales instead. But I caught the second half when I got home. Rooney scores his first Everton hat-trick. Two scruffy ones followed by the goal of the season. Hands down.
I wouldn't even say it was goal season. I would say, maybe because of my vantage point sitting in the park and watching it, I think it's technically the best goal I've ever seen Everton play a score.
It looks really good, the way it goes over those West Ham players' heads.
I'm behind it in the park end, and I can see he's an half, but it's like he hits it like a golfer, and it sounds bizarre to say this, you know, as soon as he hits it, you go, it's in. You can just tell, because the way he doesn't hit it with power, it's the way he cuts across it. And, you know, the referee, to be fair, does a good job to get out the way of it, but the technique on it is frankly unbelievable.
And you only get one chance to do that, like as good as Sigurdsson's goal against Southampton was. You know, you can try to hit a shot from 25 yards with a bit of time with the ball at your feet. That comes through, and he has to just make it a split second decision there.
I think he's one of a handful of players who've played for Everton during this period who have even have the ability to do that.
Yeah.
The goals to do it. And it was a truly unbelievable strike. I mean, it was a really important phase of the game, because obviously we're 2-0 up, but then West Ham is a penalty. You know, we're on the ropes a little bit at the beginning of the second half, and it just took the sting out of the game. And though Ashley Williams makes it 4-0, and on paper you think it was pretty comfortable, but it was a nervy start to the game, and even though we were 2-0 up, we were on the ropes at the beginning of that second half, so it wasn't just a fantastic goal, but it was quite an important one.
Well, it lifts us up to 13th, so
yeah.
David Unsworth has taken the team from 18th to 13th in 6 weeks. Has Moshiri been too hasty in moving the earth for Sam Allardyce?
Yes and no, I think.
Or has knowing that permanent manager is imposed, has that sparked the performance from the players here?
No, I don't think that has per se. I think, West Ham were in a real funk, and also, well, there's been in this period, recent period, there's been more two results. Traditionally, Everton have a pretty good record against West Ham. I've seen Everton teams like under Walter Smith that were struggling, put hit West Ham for 6 or 5, and I think that there's a little bit in that. I just think that I don't think Allardyce being in the stands had the effect. I just think it was just two teams that were struggling. One team got advantage, and one team had a player who still had world-class ability at times, who scored an unbelievable goal and also contrived to miss a penalty, which he did more than once during this.
So I remember thinking that they made a mistake not giving Unsworth like a fixed term in a way, you know what I mean? Like, I think they should have said Unsworth's in charge until the end of the season, because by not doing that, it gave the likes of Morales and Schneiderlin an excuse, to just down tools. They both end up getting chased from the squad. I just,
Objectively, it is funny though. Do you want to go in? And they just both go, yeah. I'll train them.
yeah. So Allardyce tries to take all the credit really for beating West Ham 4-0. His first actual game in charge is a straightforward win. It's 2-0 against Huddersfield at home. Sigurdsson and Calvert-Lewin
Yeah.
with the goals. He's not even there at his second match because it's the ultimate dead rubber away in Cyprus versus
I'm sorry,
Akwaaba.
but I want to touch on that. I know, no, but I think that for me, that was another massive red flag. I appreciate it might have been a dead rubber, but that man was paid to manage Everton Football Club. He should have been there. I know we had that, no, but he should have been there. That was his job.
Well,
And I just think it shows how much he had us over a barrel,
the
or he had
funny thing
Messini over
is, like, because Sammy Lee's not there either, so it's
barrel.
Craig Shaky Shakespeare takes charge.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Not even his assistant. It was really. I thought that was
Well,
really indicative of the lack of respect.
I mean, both teams are out. We've got a Merseyside derby at the weekend. I get the logic, but I know what you mean as well. It feels a bit inappropriate seeing Shakespeare managing the team. It's very much a second string side that wins 3-0. We secure third place in the group with that. Vlahovic gets a goal. Adamola Luckman gets two. And there's a late sub appearance from a horribly young looking Anthony Gordon.
In his next boxes. Do you remember there was a photo of him? You could see he had boxes from next when his
No.
shorts came up. Everyone's going, ah, oh, he's a lad. Yeah,
Love it. Yeah,
there was doing the thing at the time.
I've got a picture of him here, I think. It's just mad how young he looks, and I suppose he was very young. Was he only about 16 or 17 at the time? He looks like an actual child,
Young.
a toddler. Here's the picture. Look at him.
God, yeah.
Look at him.
Looks like Gail Platt.
Look at
Number 7, well.
big AG 17. Yeah, so he comes on for his debut. We don't actually see him again this season. That's the only appearance that he makes. But there'll be more to come from him later in our journey, definitely. And it's on to the tin mine for the 229th Merseyside Derby. Allardyce goes with two up front, Calvert-Lewin and Nias. I think we watched this game in your flat.
We did, and the sky cut out when we got the penalty, didn't it? We had to watch it on my phone.
Oh my God. Well, Everton play okay, but don't really trouble Liverpool. They take the
Yeah,
Liverpool
that's
take the
fair.
lead just before half time.
Brilliant goal, unfortunately, wasn't it? Not much we could have done about that one.
It's Mo Salah. He's already looking to steal at 36 million. He scores a goal that actually ends up winning the Puskás Award.
I mean, it was a
And
good goal, but I don't think it was that good.
exactly. It's not remarkable. Like he
Yeah.
skins Cuco Martina and then curls it in. Who hasn't? Rooney scored a better one a week and a half ago. So, but that's fine.
Yeah, I definitely think
Everton have to attack in the second half, and they get the perfect opportunity to equalise with the first penalty at Anfield for 29 years. Liam, do you know who took that one?
him, Wayne Clark, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was also Wazza. Also Wazza in a 1-0, a 1-1 draw. And yeah, Rooney scores it. He blasts it straight up the middle. The move starts with Jonjo Kenny showing some really good composure. He plays a short ball to Rooney himself on the right wing. He sees Calvert-Lewin start to pull away from Lovren, and he picks him out perfectly. Calvert-Lewin takes the ball down on his knee. It appears like he's pushed in the back by Lovren and goes down. Ref gives a pen. The away end can't believe it. Lovren picks the ball up and volleys it away like a bitch. I remember thinking at the time that it was a penalty. Watching it back, I can see both sides. There's a hilarious moment, though, in the press conference after when Klopp asks for a show of hands for the journalists who thought it was a penalty, and they all put their hands up.
It's It was a pen. He pushed him. The thing is, for me, I think it was a pen, but also there was no need to do it. Calvert-Lewin's going away from goal. Lovren, there's no need for Lovren to do it.
Yeah. He wasn't the brightest, was he?
No, he wasn't.
There's another tough away game 3 days later at St. James's Park. There's some real shite in this Newcastle team, though. I couldn't believe it. And they managed to finish like mid-table.
Yeah. It's a terrible game of football and a terrible goal to the side, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Schneiderlin's back in the starting 11 now. Rooney scores again, and it's a big 1-0 win. It's our first away win in 11 months.
Yeah, mad, Dan. Because although we were good the second half pre-season, the Cooey, we just, after that Palace game, just went to bits on the road, didn't we?
Yeah, it was all at home, wasn't it?
Yeah.
There's a 3-1 win at home to Swansea on Monday Night Football, which follows. Calvert-Lewin, Sigurdsson and Rooney get the goals.
Rooney one misses time, a pen again. Calvert-Lewin gets the rebound, doesn't he? Yeah.
One-time Everton target Leroy Fair have given the Swans the lead. But yeah, we win, and all of a sudden, 3 weeks after being in the relegation zone, we're up to ninth.
Says a lot about the league more than it does about us, though.
It does, and I think it shows how tight it was in that kind of mid-table to bottom half.
Yeah.
Teams. Because we've just had a couple of wins here, and we're right up there. We're actually closer on points at this point to the top four than we are to the bottom three.
Which is insane, really, when you think how bad we've been.
So where's the jeopardy gone? Like, for the rest of the season now, it feels like we're safe. We spent all this money on Sam Allardyce, and this is where I really start to think that it shows that we should have just held out for a little bit, just held our nerve. We're not going to be bothering either end of the table. Although, saying that, the Blues now go on a 7-game winless run, and it's this that starts to turn the fans against Allardyce. There's 2 goalless draws, first at home to Chelsea, and then away to West Brom. They're followed by a 2-1 defeat at Bournemouth, to CL 2017, Idrissa Gueye with the goal there. Yannick Bolasie's back after more than a year out with a knee injury. He starts.
That was literally the only thing that happened in the West Brom game was Bolasie came back. That's the only event of that game.
Well, he starts the next game, which is a wretched showing against Man United at home on New Year's Day.
Yeah.
And Anthony Martial scores, if you can believe it.
No.
United win 2-0. And then it's time for us to bomb out of the third cup competition this season. Back to Anfield for the FA Cup third round. This game was live on BBC One. Sigurdsson cancels out James Milner's penalty in a nice counter-attacking move. But there's only one way this match is going to end. It's the new signing, Virgil van Dijk, on his debut. Headers in the winner. Sends the home fans and the commentators home very happy. They had not stopped talking about it.
I was actually at the game.
Yeah.
We had an extended. I'd been to a few of the European games, so I had that. Obviously, I had a lot of credits for the away. So that season, I've been to a few away. So I was at that game. Never nice losing the derby. Always a bad way to lose it, especially late on. Obviously, it was a bit fraught with Firmino and Holgate. The thing that I always strikes me about this game is that Sigurdsson's goal, by the way, is a really good goal. And Jack Yelka, it happens occasionally in his Everton career. Jack Yelka just rocks up like on the counter attack, and I like that sometimes, that abandon. You know, I think you need to see that more in football. And yeah, I think that was something that Allardyce kind of did in this game, which was unusual for him. I think in the second half he really took the handbrake off. But the biggest issue for me, and I don't criticize other people for how they feel, is there's some fans who go, oh, look at those limbs. I don't like that. We lost this game.
Yeah.
It was an equaliser in the game we lost. It's like a lot of people fate your Fiorentina as a wonderful night. And I get it because Goodison was bouncing, but we didn't do anything with it. I don't like celebrating it. That's my view anyway.
No, people just like a limbs video and out of context.
And I get that. Get that. And it was your bad because we had the full end. It was. But I think Danny Murphy made some rather ill-judged comments about a chap with crutches, I'm led to believe. But
everything Danny Murphy says is an ill-judged comment. So
that is fair. That's why I clarified the lad with crutches, because most things he says are relatively poorly judged. But yeah, for me, I just think maybe it's not a big deal, but sometimes it gets glorified a bit when you're we lost.
Well, cool. They don't stop us getting to Wembley though, because we're there the next week to play Tottenham.
Very good.
They'd relocated during the redevelopment of White Hart Lane into their new ground. We've got a new striker. Cenk Tosun's in from Besiktas for £27 million.
It was announced at half-time during the derby.
Oh, what a PR move. What a PR move. He plays an hour of a really poor 4-0 loss. Another new boy makes his debut the next week at home to West Brom, as Theo Walcott joins from Arsenal for a fee in excess of £20 million as well. A few players leave to make way for these two. So Kevin Morales goes out on loan to Olympiacos. Aaron Lennon leaves Burnley. Adamola Luckman is off to Leipzig on loan. I think Sandro goes to Celta Vigo, does he?
Yeah.
So yeah, they clean out a few forward players there to make room for these two.
I think they try to move Klaassen on, but they don't really get anywhere with it, don't they?
Yeah, need to try a bit harder with that one. Allardyce talks about the fans want, you know, they don't want potential, they want to finish that article, and that's why he's gone for these two. So even though we've spent 140 million in the summer, even though we're safe and we're not going to trouble Europe, we're still spending 50 million quid on two more players.
And that you say about the season madness. Being microcosm is the issues that really is. We don't need Tosin and Walcott, really. And what I would say, though, is, and I think it's easy to look back time, Walcott was pretty impressive in that second half season, but I think it's because of how poor the team was. He came in with a bit of energy and a bit of vibe. He's obviously, I know we're going to get to it shortly, the Leicester win, but, you know, he had a bit about him, a bit of pace and a bit of something. I don't think he's brilliant, but I just think because we've been so turgid to watch at times, it gets overlooked. He was all right when he first came in. Walcott, to be honest with you, in my opinion, anyway.
Well, it's Nias who scores again here, rescues another 1-1 draw. It's this game where James McCarthy suffers the leg break that effectively ends his Everton career. He makes a brilliant recovery to stop Solomon Rondon scoring.
That was horrible. You could tell from the park end straight away someone bad happened there.
Yeah, it's a shame to see him that badly injured.
I like McCarthy as a player. Obviously, he's been beset by injuries at this point. He was obviously more on the periphery, which was
I think we'll speak more about him in a positive tone of the seasons. But yeah, that's more or less the end for him. Ironically, it's his Republic of Ireland teammate, Seamus Coleman, who's back for the next game from his own broken leg. He starts against Leicester. Despite the run of bad results we've had, we're still in ninth place. We beat Leicester 2-1 on a Wednesday night. The mood's much more positive. And like you said, Walcott gets the goals. I think Coleman being back like that was a bit of a boost to the home crowd.
I think it was, but I think there's some of the whacks you want to specifically talk about. The Seamus will probably feature a lot on this pod. As we record it, he's just signed an extension to take him into his 16th season at Everton. I think a lot of people say, and I agree with it, that we can't necessarily classify a lot of players from this era as legends because they haven't won anything, and I get that. And I broadly agree with it, but I would actually go as far as say Coleman might be an exception to that. He's excellent, and he's tiring towards the end of the game, and I don't know if you remember it. He got the ball size on half and basically ran and nearly got to Leicester's box. He runs out of a bit of steam, understandably, because it's his first game of football in 10 months because it was the previous March. He broke his leg, wasn't it? And the whole stadium applauds him because, yeah, there's probably something that will feature when we touched upon earlier. Evertonians love effort, but I think Seamus's attitude, I think it really helped having him around the dressing room. I think it still does. And, you know, his care for Everton was shown that night. And he was genuinely, because in the nature of the injury come back off, he was genuinely outstanding that night.
Well, February starts a few days later with us getting our kecks pulled down by Arsenal again.
That was a tough one to watch, wasn't it?
We're 3-0 down after 19 minutes. It ends 5-1. Aaron Ramsey gets a hat-trick. Right. Eliakim Mangala plays after joining on loan from Man City. I've got to be honest, I forgot all about this clown.
Well, yeah, there's a reason why we'll get to in a second. He wasn't around for long, was he?
No, because he goes off injured in the next game at home to Palace, and we never see him again.
No.
Morgan Schneiderlin gets booed when he comes on as a late sub in that game, even though we're like 3-1 up. I think his showing at the Emirates looks like it was the last straw for a lot of Everton fans.
I think he had a lot of last straws, Schneiderlin, didn't he, particularly around this time. And just to go back to the Arsenal game, though, sorry to kind of jump back, but for the listeners, they won't, obviously, you know, me and Kev have been friends for many years, but one of the funniest things Kev's ever done was he got a Photoshop of, there's a famous Alan Partridge meme where he says, just sack someone, I forget the name of the person.
Fats.
But Kev put Fats. It in, yeah, just sack Fats.
It's from Alphabet.
Yes, from the film Alpha, but Kev managed to do it to it said just sack Sam after the Arsenal game. And it was really amusing. Hopefully maybe that can be the picture for this pod when we put up on social media.
I don't remember doing that at all, but
just sack Sam. It was really good.
But we didn't seal state till the end of the season.
Yeah,
so we beat Palace 3-1, Sigurdsson, Nias and Davis with the goals. But even when we win, you know, in this season, there seems to be something that adds to the malaise, like Schneiderlin getting booed. John Joe Kenny has a shot in the first half. It's about 40 minutes in. It's our first shot on target for like three games.
And
apart from that, for that goal at Arsenal. And the fans like do this big, like, ironic cheer and round of applause. And they start singing, "We've had a shot." I wrote here, Allardyce as Everton is no fun.
No, it's not. It's
that's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah, it feels entitled now, given the struggles we've had in recent seasons. But yeah. I think, in some respects, the Allardyce season, particularly the second half, which is probably why you notice we're kind of ripping through it after spending so long on the pod and the early season problems, I think it's amongst some of the toughest watch. I think it's because he has players capable of playing on the front foot at times. You've got your Sigurdsson's. Rooney is fading, but you've got Sigurdsson. He's brought Walcott in. Balassi's back to fitness. You know, Calvert-Lewin's growing as a player. You've still got Baines in there. Coleman's back. There's still some quality in that squad. And I think that's why when we talked about the derby and the cup, it was strange he took the handbrake off because he was so reticent to do so in the Premier League. And I'm not saying we should have gone gung-ho, but there were just games. I mean, the Palace game, we won at a canter in the end, but those games could have been put to bed just with a bit of positivity much earlier in my recollection.
Well, we lose the next one 1-0 to a Watford side with Richarlison and Gerard Deulofeu on the wings.
R5 on a Saturday night, that was a crap game. That was
Ooze and Fabric here at the Hornets with that side. Yeah. Not Ooze and Fabric, Everton, we lose again 2-1 at Burnley. Tosin gets his first goal. Ashley Williams gets a stupid red card. He's another one fans seem to have no time for anymore. I'm not even
Chris
sure.
Chris Ward does it, doesn't he?
Yeah, I'm not sure if Williams plays again this season, but it feels like that's kind of the end of him as an Everton player.
You know, it's bad because shortly afterwards, there's people starting to say, oh, Morrie might be back soon. we haven't even discussed in all of this.
Well, we then leapfrog a Brighton side with the 2-0 win. Sorry, we then leapfrog Brighton with a 2-0 win. Tosin scores
I would argue that was one of the better performances under Allardyce. Tosin's goal is a really nice move. I know the first goal was an on goal from Gaten Bong, but it was actually it was a pretty good move. A lovely little cut back by Baines and a great finish by Tosin at the park end. And it wasn't a fantastic game by any stretch of the imagination, but I would say under Allardyce that was one of the better performances. It wasn't great, but it was okay.
I was in Munich that weekend for Pornos that do. We actually went to watch 1860 on the Friday night. That was really good. You can get in Germany.
I'm sure the football you witnessed was much better than the one that we did. But
well, you can just have a pint in the stand and they sell these massive pretzels and it was just great. It was nice not feeling stressed watching a game of footy. I remember that. but there's an own goal from Gaetan Bon, like you said. Leighton Baines is back, thank God. Anthony Knockhart is sent off for a shithouse tackle on Baines. Seamus Coleman gives him loads as he walks off the pitch, which you like to see.
You always do. Yeah, I remember that. His boss, that Seamus proper goes into him, doesn't he?
Yeah. And then Tosin gets another two in the snow on St. Patrick's Day away at Stoke. Charlie Adam is sent off and Paul Lambert is their manager, which I don't remember at all.
He came in before the end of the season. He's managed so many clubs like Blackburn and Wolves. He's really been around Lambert, hasn't he? You know, he obviously ended up at Ipswich, haven't been a Norwich manager. They seem destined for defeat. I think early in the season, they rested all their players for a cup game, went out the cup because they had a league game with Chelsea and Mark Hughes and they lost 5-0. That was kind of the end of the Hughes reign, although they'd spent decent money, it was running out of steam. I think this game again, tough watch. I remember watching it. I didn't go to the game, but I remember watching it with a particularly bad hangover because I'd been out the previous day to watch some horse racing. It wasn't a classic. I think the thing that confused me, and it happened a couple of times this season when there's a bit of snow, is the blue lines on the pitch. Really unusual look. Do you know when you say the centre circle on the boxes? They were doing in blue. It was a bit weird.
Yeah, and you don't have the orange ball anymore, which always used to help. They just like go
ahead
and
the yellow one now. I think that they use the yellow ball in the winter, but when it snows, they still have an orange one.
I'm not sure, you know. But I thought for this now, let's see.
Let's have a look at it. I'm pretty confident they do, to be honest with you.
That was the yellow ball.
Oh, is it? Okay. Yeah. Do you know what I'm thinking of? I think that same season, Arsenal played City. Yeah, the markers. I'm pretty sure they played an orange ball. I'm going to check that. That might be where my confusion comes from.
Doesn't matter that, you know, going off on a bit of a tangent here. Couple of things. Tosin started to look the part at this point. Also, there's a balance to the side now. There's round pegs and round holes.
Yeah, there's no Cuco Martina at left back, which was uncomfortable to watch, wasn't it?
Well, next up are Man City. They're going for their first title in 4 years. They beat a 3-0 up at half-time. It's a no one surprise.
Absolutely battered us. Scored some brilliant goals, but like just in that purple kit, and they look, they just absolutely.
Yeah, Blassie gets a late consolation, but
yeah, and Blassie takes that well. But for me, the thing with it was, it was a depression watch that. But I don't blame Allardyce. I think that was the first time we'd really seen, because Guardiola, we'd got a draw and two draws and a win against Guardiola. But I think that was the first and not the last time we saw Guardiola come to Goodison and just his team just take a stranglehold of the game. I remember my friend, who's a Man City fan, saying he'd been to watch Bayern against City under Guardiola, and he said it's quite depressing when they come and they just take the sting out the stadium because they just control the game from first to last.
Well, Allardyce is very pleased with himself. He thinks that he's Guardiola the next week when he draws 0-0 with the Liverpool's Goodison derby.
Well, against Liverpool, is it Danny Ings playing up front?
Ings and Solanke. Yeah, Solanke played in like every game against us.
Yeah, that game, I remember there being a real anger with Allardyce because Liverpool were obviously, they get to the final of the Champions League that season. They're quite deep into it. But Klopp pulled out a shadow team because I think might be they were playing City, weren't they? They'd beaten City midweek and they were playing them the next midweek in the quarters. I remember there would be the real anger in the ground because it was only in the last 10 minutes that Allardyce went, yeah, let's have a go at these.
Is this the one where Calvert-Lewin misses the sitter, or is that the season after?
Yeah, it's this one because Calvert-Lewin misses this one because the season after is when Richarlison's playing, isn't it? And it was when the siren's introduced.
I just can't remember. I think those games are the same two games for me.
No, they're very different for me. And in this, I remember Blasting was like, and only in the last 10 minutes do we start having a bit of a go. People are livid because, and I get it, because we don't have anything to play for. Liverpool have put the reserves out. Just have a go with them.
He's made up with himself. He gets a 0-0 and he looks really smug after it.
People will be angry if we lose, like we did the previous season when Mane scores, but have a go. I think they played a real shadow side. I'd need to get their team up from it. But I remember the likes of Solanke, Ings playing. I think might have had Ragnar Klavan playing. They genuinely put the reserves out because understandably they were deep into the Champions League at a time when we've been several years without a win at this point, and it does continue a while longer. Yeah. It's an easy opportunity for them, especially because, as I touched on earlier, in the cup game, he did throw cautions to the wind a little bit. He brought on Luckman and Blassie, and he had a go at it. I always found it really strange that he didn't do that in this game.
Well, the season really peters out from this point. There's a 1-1 draw at Swansea, Carl Norton with an own goal for us.
Awful game of footballer. I know I've said that a lot. Really poor game of footballer.
Yeah. Again, Phil McNulty makes reference to it at the end of the season after Allardyce goes, and he says this seems to be a game where the fans just really ain't vocal.
Mori comes back for that game, doesn't he, I think?
Funes Mori's back from, I've put Romero, Funes Mori makes his return from injury in that one. No one cares. I think that's kind of fair. It's
not right, did it, yeah?
Doesn't sound it, but it's accurate at least.
A danger in both boxes, was he?
We then beat Rafa Benitez as Magpies again through a Theo Walcott goal to go eighth.
Another scrappy one. That was the first night, a thread that we're probably going to discuss at the pod. That was the first night that we noticed the needle between Pickford and the Magpies. They were singing songs about Adam Johnson and him all night. And then towards the end, he goes over the ball's going for a throw-in, and he kind of just, he dummies it, lets it go out, and then gives it a bit of a chin. The thing I find mad about that, and I know we're probably going to discuss it in length in other pods, is it's the outrage that they have when he reacts. They case him for like 90 minutes and then think he's disrespectful when he gives them a little bit back, which I just find bizarre.
Yeah, they can beg it.
Yeah, it's a strange thing, isn't it?
We then complete another double away at Huddersfield, winning 2-0. Tosin and Idris Gay with the goals. And we're into May and we can see the light at the end of the tunnel now. The World Cup will be on in a few weeks. Allardyce, I think, in light of this, goes a bit experimental at home to Southampton. Vlasic is back from nowhere. He starts on the left wing. Allardyce switches to a back three at half time. Southampton score almost straight away. David Klaassen even comes on. Tom Davis scores a 95th minute equaliser. Southampton would have been a step closer to safety with a win, so their players look gutted.
They were outraged, weren't they? They were outraged in the game. And there's a couple of things about this game that stand out to me. We're wearing the new kit for the next season, which is a vast improvement on the. Yeah, the one time we see Wayne Rooney in it, apart from the kit launch. Just that, and just a couple of little things about it, that just from a personal perspective, kind of colour it. The first time I've ever seen Everton score a league goal in the Oak, I got to the Oak was when Tom Davies scored, because I don't normally leave early, but I was like, no, I can't carry on watching this. And you remember it was a 5:30 kickoff, really sunny day, so everyone kind of got on the ale because there wasn't much for us to play for. And I know me and Chris talk about this sometimes, my friend who I sit with at the match, and he'll want me to put this in the pod. It's only a little story, but there's a lad a few years younger than this who sits in our row to our left, and he tries to walk past us, and he stumbles, and I'm not exaggerating, he takes 2 to 3 minutes to get past us. And this fella who's next to us goes, "Are you Bevy there, lad?" And he just puts his hand to his mouth like he's whispering a secret, and he goes, "I'm Bevied myself." And it was so stupid. But to this day, I don't know what this lad's name is. If you listen to this pod, you'll know my face. You seem a good lad. But me and Chris refer to him as Bevied myself. And I'm sorry, not Bevy, bladdered. The pod said blad. He said, yeah, he went, "You bladdered?" He went, "I'm bladdered myself." And like it was a joke, he could barely stand up. He was absolutely rotten. So that tells you how bad this game was. That's my memory of the game.
Yeah, and Davis's goal is the last kick of Goodison this season.
And it's a terrible goal as well, isn't it? Like, rickety. I know it's nice to see Tom get a goal because he's okay this season, Tom. I know he's maligned, but I think he's all right in the season, as we've touched on, isn't he?
Yeah, and he kind of got the move started himself. Ryan Bertrand could have let the ball go out for a throw into us, but tries to keep it in and just ends up giving it back to us, and we score about 5 seconds later. But yeah, a chance to fuck off Sam Allardyce rings all around.
Yeah, people, that wasn't one way people stepped for the round of appreciation, because I don't think people appreciated what was going on.
You can put a fork in Big Sam at this point, I think it's fair to say. And we finished the 2017-18 campaign with 3-1 defeat to West Ham at the London Stadium. What a way to go.
Umar gets his
8th goal of the season.
I watched that game, even though it was crack game football, nothing riding, but it was a rare last day of the season where there was absolutely nothing riding. City had won the league at the canter. Because Southampton beat Swansea in the midweek, the relegation places were decided. I think the only thing was City won, broke the 100-point and 100-goal mark, didn't they? That was literally the only bit of jeopardy on the final day, although I do recollect there being a mad game. I think it was 5-4 between Spurs and Leicester at Wembley, just a bit of a free-for-all.
Do you know what landmark we had in this game as well?
Was this the point where we lost the most matches of any Premier League team?
I don't think so. That might have come a lot earlier. this is our 1,000th Premier League game.
God, what a landmark.
What a way to go.
We marked this almost as badly as Wenger marked his 1,000th game in charge of Arsenal when he got smoked 6-0 at Chelsea.
Well, this, apart from Umar's goal, there's not really much else to say. It's his 8th goal of the season. We finish 8th on 49 points. And then 3 days later, Allardyce is sacked.
I think for context, that 49 points is really important, because obviously we've just finished this season with 23-24 with 40 points. Sans a 8 points, obviously got the 8 points to the Premier League took off us. And it shows this team probably has, although we've got Branthwaite, has a lot less quality than that squad, I would argue, but it's only a point off it.
And after that initial run of games from Allardyce, I think he only went 6 out of 21. It's not like it's not like European football form.
No, it's just enough, isn't it? It's like,
yeah, it does not enough, and then he acts like he's done us a favour by doing that. Yeah. We'll be grateful to, infallible Pope Sam 13.
I think that's who he's become. I think if you get, obviously we wouldn't have gone at the time because we were set with Moyes, but if you get Allardyce when he leaves Bolton, when he goes to Newcastle, I think he's a manager there who's like, okay, I want to actually build and achieve something. But I think gets brought into Blackburn, keeps them up, then obviously gets like up from there. West Ham does okay, but then he firefights at both Sunderland and Palace. I think at that point, and obviously he does it again without success later on his career at West Brom and Leeds, I think at that point he's content to just do like the bare minimum, take 6-8 months pay or whatever. Well, obviously we give him an 18-month deal, so he knows he's coined. But I think at this point in his career, he's happy to just kind of come in, not have to do pre-season or planning, just get things over the line and just sit back. I think that's where he sees himself at that point, from the outside looking in.
On the BBC's analysis, they say that Allardyce was particularly annoyed by a decision by the club to send out a survey.
Oh, yes. One of the
questions on there was asking fans to rank the manager's performance on a scale of 0 to 10. It wasn't even 1 to 10. You could vote 0, and I know I did. And
I'm pretty confident I did as well, yeah.
So I'd love to see the results for that. We never did see them.
Throughout the Mishiri area, which will obviously be a big thread of this pod, there are so many things, that little things you go, that's just mad. That's mad. Like, you know, and I don't want to spoil because we're talking about it, but there's just, and this is the first of it, you go, that's bizarre decision making. It's really strange thing to do.
And if you look at the stats here, the kind of middling apart from shots, we had the lowest shots of any team during this time there. And I think that was the problem. You know, it was just really dull to watch.
Well, that's part of his philosophy, though, isn't he? I think Allardyce is quite open about that, in that he...
have a shot.
He discourages long-range shooting, yeah. He discourages long-range. Like, I remember Kevin Nolan scoring a great goal for Bolton in the North season, saying, I'm probably going to be in trouble because I hit him there. And there's one on the opening day of 06-07. Ivan Campo scores a very bizarre goal, unbelievable. Low shot from 40 yards out, just like a daisy cutter, but with such venom. It's a fabulous goal. I remember hearing the tale that rather than being like, oh, that's a great goal, Allardyce took Campo out onto the pitch, dropped the ball the same spot and said, do it again. And he gets outraged because it's the biggest concession of possession, because the amount of shots that go wide or over, and you can see the possession. Which I suppose is a take on football, but you know, people like to be entertained, people are paying good money, so I understand why fans sometimes rail against that, not just Evertonians.
He's so annoying. But yeah, that's it. I don't think we need to speak much more about him. I made a note here, there's of the first team players we played the last game in this season. So after this, these players are gone. Ashley Williams, Cooper Martina, Wayne Rooney, Yannick Bolasie, Nikola Vlasic, Davy Klassen, super big Kev Morales, Benny Beningame, Mohamed Bezic, Joel Robles, and Romero Funes Mori. Some of them stay around, contracted for a couple more years and just go out on loan, so we don't see them again. But yeah, that's 11 players there, and you know, for no reason whatsoever, I jotted them out into a formation for team, and it works out quite well. It's like a nice little 4-5-1. That's it for episode one, I think, 2017-18. Liam, why don't you tell us what we've pulled out of the hat for next week?
Yeah, so our next episode, we say next week.
Next time.
Our next episode is going to feature the season 2006-2007. It was a season I quite enjoyed. I'd say it's more of a positive season, the 17-18, wouldn't you, Kev?
Well, we get big Rocky Balboa on the pitch, don't we? So
We do. We've potentially got someone to discuss that coming on the pod. But yeah, that's what we're going to do. We'll reveal, obviously, at the end of the next episode, what the episode after that is going to be, because we're going to pre-record a few of these, I think it's fair to say, isn't it, Kev? And then once we've done a few, we're going to open up to listeners and ask what season they want to review. But
I don't think we need to let people into the sausage factory too much.
No, we don't. We don't want to lose the mystique too much. But
the ends will justify the means.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, the format basically is that we're going to take turns leading on a season like this. So I've done today. You filled in with the colour. Yeah, you'll be leading us through. Document 06-07.
Yeah, looking forward to it, Kev. And I just want to say, I'm sure you'll be like anyone who's listened to this, thank you so much. Obviously, wherever you have listened, if you can leave us a rating, comments, that'd be lovely. But it's been really enjoyable. Thanks, Kev.
Yeah, we're on Good Times EFC Pod. That's our handle on Twitter and Instagram. So get on there, give us a like and a follow. Keep an eye out for more updates. And we'll see you next time on Good Times.